who's leading him, and he just does the rest. He's got crazy flipper fingers, never seen him fall. That Jeff Dunham flying kid sure plays a mean pinball.
WRCT Pittsburgh, when it doesn't make any sense.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
WRCT Pittsburgh. It's more fun when it doesn't make any sense.
Hi, this is Felicia Collins from Late Show with David Letterman, and you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
So we have another new headline about the spending bill slash infrastructure bill discussion that continues to, I don't want to be negative, but it sort of is like plaguing us at this point. The fact that it's discussion and grandstanding and people getting attention for getting attention for opposing things that they should be in favor of. But maybe this is good news. And the news is that House Democrats have put paid family leave back into the spending bill. Now, I'm going to tell you what the news is, and I'm going to tell you what's being said. But my view on this is that this, it's in and of itself, may be grandstanding. And I don't know if I'm at this point just jaded and cynical. You'll have to tell me, but we'll get to that. Remember, the context is that even as things were completely falling apart, Bernie Sanders went on TV over the weekend and said, hey, I'm still working on the prescription drug cost control aspect of this. And then on Tuesday, it was announced, hey, the prescription drug control component is back in the bill. We talked about that a couple of days ago. Now the news is House Democrats put paid family leave back into the bill. The Hill reporting, House Democrats have amended the enormous social spending framework at the heart of President Biden's economic agenda to include paid family leave, a popular provision that had met resistance from Senator Joe Manchin and was thought to be removed. The change was announced Wednesday morning in a letter from Speaker Pelosi, who said the House Rules Committee would meet later in the day to consider the changes. But Pelosi stopped short of announcing the vote on the package. Instead, the Speaker said there remain a few outstanding issues. It has been my intention through the process to put on the House floor and pass a bill that would pass the Senate in the same form. Because I've been informed by a senator of opposition to a few of the priorities contained in our bill, and because we must have legislation agreed to by the House and Senate in the final version of Build Back Better that we will send to the president's desk, we must strive to find common ground. Biden initially proposed 12 weeks of paid family leave, a provision adopted by House Democrats, but Manchin balked at the $494 billion price tag, forcing negotiators to consider a sharp reduction down to 4 weeks before Biden slashed it altogether. Progressives grumbled and said they would accept it as a cost of enacting other social benefits. Pelosi on Wednesday, however, said paid leave would be part of the House Rules Committee's discussion. The decision came at the urging of many members of the caucus. Chairman Richie Neal and the committee staff have worked on this priority for a long time and we're ready. The provision will provide 4 weeks, not the 12, 4 weeks of permanent parental and medical leave, according to an aide familiar with the language. Alex Bolton reporting, Manchin not thrilled to hear Speaker Pelosi has added 4 weeks of paid leave back in BBB. That's a challenge and they know how I feel about it. So, okay, first of all, this isn't the infrastructure bill. This is the 2022 budget bill labeled Build Back Better or BBB. There's confusion between the two without a doubt. Often it's not really, they just say the bill. So there's confusion, but this is the Build Back Better bill. Now, in an ideal world, everything would be in its own bill. So you say, okay, let's do a bill for paid family leave. Who's for it? Who's against it? Okay, you figure it out. The problem is that if you did that, a whole bunch of stuff would just never pass. The whole system we have is this pseudo-corrupt system of cronyism and earmarks and pork, where people in the House and Senate agree to support X as long as Y is in there. And that's sort of like a for better or for worse thing. That's why we get these packages with so many things in there. Now, there are real questions as to how these 4 weeks would even work. Do you have to pay into it or not? What counts as leave? What's a worker? What about gig workers? What about self-employed people, independent contractors? Does it only apply to W-2? We just don't know. And what's the future of this? We have absolutely no idea. What I know is two things, and this is where I want to go back to. Am I being too cynical? Time is running out to get this done this calendar year, to get this done before the House and Senate recess for the end of the year. I am starting to wonder whether things are getting added back in so that it looks better as a bill that's not going to pass. What I mean by that is, one perspective is that Build Back Better is dead, that the Build Back Better Act, at least in 2021, is not going to pass. So thinking very cynically, are they making the bill more robust so that when it doesn't pass, they can say, look, we put our best foot forward. We added prescription drug controls. We added some paid leave so that the bill looks better to progressives, knowing that the bill is essentially dead. They will not pass a better bill rather than not pass a crappier bill. I don't know. It's all disappointing. This has been going on for months at this point. These are all things that should not be controversial in a country as rich as the United States. These things aren't controversial in most other countries at our level of wealth. But let me know if you think I'm being too cynical about now they're just trying to make the bill better before not passing it to say, it would have been a pretty good bill, but it has no chance of passing. Let me know what you think. I have disturbing video for you today of Ron DeSantis appearing on Fox News with a kid who says that masks are bad, basically. And this looks like a hostage video. It looks like, I mean, listen, I'm going to play it for you. It's only 10 seconds. We'll look at it a couple of times. This looks like a hostage video where the kid barely has any idea what they're being forced to say. And Ron DeSantis, Republican Florida governor, looks so smug. Let's just look and listen to this, and then we'll see if we can make heads or tails out of it.
Go ahead.
I'm not wearing a mask because you touch it and you have germs on your hand, and then you put it on your face and breathe in all the germs.
That's right.
And
right. So,
okay, and listen, there's Steve Ducey, I think, saying that's right.
That's right. So,
this is Fiona Lachelles, a second grader in Florida. And of course, when we think about public policy, my instinct always is ask one second grader what they think and make that the policy. Now, something about this video is extremely disturbing, but many things about the video are extremely disturbing. Republicans seem to have found a way to put kids front and center on masks and not wanting them. Notice that they never put front and center the kids of parents who died unvaccinated of COVID. I wish they got the same prominent placement as Fiona Lachelles saying, I don't want to wear the mask. Let's listen to it one more time.
Go ahead.
I'm not wearing a mask because you touch it and you have germs on your hand, and then you put it on your face and breathe in all the germs.
And Ron DeSantis just looks so thrilled. Now, it's been, we have two options. We could ask a second grader, handpicked by Ron DeSantis, their opinion of masks, or we could look at the studies. Endless studies on this. Do face masks work? 49 scientific studies explain why they do. You can go to JAMA Insights. They have a meta-analysis called Effectiveness of Mask Wearing to Control Community Spread of SARS-CoV-2. They actually look at all of these different studies, and they find significant decreases in the spread of COVID. You can download this. It's a free study. You can find it. And they write, increasing number of ecological studies also provide persuasive evidence that universal masking reduces the number of infections and deaths. These studies don't distinguish the type of masks, but they all seem to work to some degree. The overall community benefit of wearing masks derives from their ability to limit both exhalation and inhalation of infectious virus. The science on masks, and then a second grader handpicked by Ron DeSantis. Sorry about that. Let's listen to it one more time. Is this child abuse in some way?
Go ahead.
I'm not wearing a mask because you touch it and you have germs on your hand, and then you put it on your face and breathe in all the germs.
Yeah, and that's importantly, this is a second grader suspended 36 days for not wearing a mask. One just little bonus clip for you from Florida, just to tell you how crazy things in Florida are. This is 14 seconds of a video of Ron DeSantis announcing he's going to create an office to investigate election crimes in Florida. What crimes are even being alleged in Florida? Election crimes? I don't know. Trump won Florida by 3.5. No one's even really talking about Florida fraud. And when Ron DeSantis announces, so think about the layers. DeSantis mishandles COVID, announces he's creating an office to investigate election crimes, which we don't need. And then the crowd starts cheering and chanting, "Let's go, Brandon." Just completely cringy. Now, if you don't know about Let's Go Brandon, it goes back to a NASCAR race during which there were people in the crowd during an interview chanting F Joe Biden. And the reporter misheard it. She was interviewing a race car driver named Brandon. And she said, "Look, they're chanting Let's Go Brandon," but really they were chanting F Joe Biden. That's where it comes from. It's not very funny. It's almost like a rallying cry of ignorance and stupidity. But when it's fitting that Ron DeSantis announces an investigation into something we don't need, and the crowd starts chanting, "Let's go, Brandon." So just horrifying, horrifying stuff happening in Florida. We've got a great show for you today. Let me know your thoughts on the DeSantis child hostage video. You can find me on Twitter at dpacman. We're going to take some of your calls, look at some of your emails, and many, many exciting things happening today. Remember that the David Pakman Show depends on the support of viewers and listeners who sign up and get a membership at joinpakman.com. We produce an extra show every day for our members. It's called The Bonus Show. It's won a number of awards. They are awards I created. It's sort of like when Rand Paul created his own ophthalmology organization as an ophthalmologist, but much more moral. Let's put it that way. Sign up at joinpakman.com. You can use the coupon code BETTER21 to get a discount. Let's hear from some people in the audience. We now take calls via Discord. It just works better. It works better than the things we used to do. You can find the Discord at davidpakman.com/Discord. Let's go first to Kevin from Grand Rapids. Presumably, is that Michigan, Kevin? Kevin from Grand Rapids, you are on the air. And last chance for Kevin from Grand Rapids. Kevin, please.
Hello?
You're on the air.
You can hear me?
Now I can.
Oh, thank you. Hey, David. Great to have a call. First time caller.
Thank you.
I'm calling. I kind of not starting off on a super topical one because I know the elections happened last night and, that's kind of a lot to talk about. But I had a question, kind of a general one. Would you agree that it seems like people on the right are a lot more organized as one these days, in a sense that like they seem to agree and like work towards goals at least slightly or mostly better than people on the left do, and what we could do to maybe come together and start to have some of that presence that people on the right seem to be getting one up us on us with? Like, I don't know. I consider myself a democratic socialist, but I know that there's a lot of people people are a little more liberal than I am that we might disagree on certain things. I don't need to get into the specifics of it, but I kind of think that it seems like the left is a little less cohesive and together and a little bit more prone to like nitpicking things.
I think you're right, Kevin. I've got a few videos on this. And indeed, I do think that there are some on the left who sometimes let the perfect become the enemy of the good. It's definitely an important issue and one I've talked about. But Kevin, I'm going to let you go because that smoke detector, that you got to deal with that. Okay, my friend. So go deal with the smoke detector.
That happened last night. I got to get a 9-volt battery.
Exactly. Yep. All right. Thank you, Kevin. Very good. We've got a lot happening there and I'm going to let him get to it. Let's go next to Isaiah from Arkansas. Isaiah, you are on the air.
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Well, I have a question, but first I'm going to kind of follow up with what Kevin said. There's definitely an issue with Democrats just being terrible at campaigning effectively. That was kind of my conclusion from Virginia and New Jersey.
Yeah.
And in the state of Arkansas, where, you know, we have like 5 Democrats elected in the entire state anywhere, there is just so much incompetence and so much of anybody working. Sorry, I don't want to take too long, but to kind of say quickly, I'm in college. I was in a group that was for like electing like a young Democrats group. Mm-hmm. And I said that based on how disorganized the party is right now, we should be focusing on voting in the Republican primaries to keep out the extremists. Because mm-hmm. in Arkansas, you have to pick which primary you vote in.
Right.
And I got kicked out of that group for, as they said, spreading Republican propaganda. So, like, if a basic thing like that of strategy, they're kicking out people, how do you expect to accomplish anything?
Sure.
Of course, that's the anecdotal thing.
Well, voting in Republican primaries when states allow you to vote in either as a way to keep out the worst candidate is a much discussed strategy that has been talked about for a while. I think it's certainly a very interesting one. I think you're absolutely right that part of what went wrong in Virginia is that Republicans are at a structural advantage. It's much easier to motivate people to vote based on anger and fear. In Virginia, a lot of it was about education and critical race theory. And fear and anger are just better motivators to get people to engage with the system. And that's something that the right uses significantly in this country. So I think your analysis is exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And in Arkansas, I might be wrong about this, but I believe you have to either vote in the Republican or the Democrat. You can't vote in both in the primary.
Yeah, I think that's the case I believe that's the case in every state. You can't vote in both primaries.
Yeah, we have. The fact of the matter is, as it stands, in 2022, the election is in March. Whoever wins the Republican primaries in any office pretty much is going to win in November. Mm-hmm. And we have, I think, a character, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but I think you'll be more familiar with him in the future. Have you heard of Jason Rapert?
No.
He is a real lunatic state senator we have that's running for lieutenant governor. And anyone listening, just read the Wikipedia article on him. Kind of speaks for itself, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. But my question is, for someone like me living in Arkansas, I think obviously I'm kind of moderate left, if you want to say. What do you think the most effective way to actually change the political demographics of the state is? Or do you think it's just better to just get out altogether?
It's your call as to whether you want to get out or not. It wouldn't be illegitimate to get out if you decide that you just want to improve your circumstances immediately rather than work to improve everybody's in your state. But find local races, find candidates that are doing the right things as far as you're concerned, and get involved in those campaigns is the best advice I can give. All right, my friend, I'm going to move on because I've got a lot of people waiting to chat. Let's go next to Jill from Burbank, California. Jill, you are on the air. Jill from Burbank, California, please unmute yourself and then we'll be able to hear you.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, big fan. Two things that I wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. One was Jesse Lee Peterson. It was fascinating to watch you debate him. But my point is that he doesn't think that he's wrong after even you confronted him and, you know, basically showed him that he doesn't know anything about his stance.
Right.
What do you think we should do to people like that? Because should we even engage? Because he's the biggest example, I think, for people. Even after you showed him the facts and tell him that he, you know, they have no stance, they go and they have their show and they have their own day to day, and they continue.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much about convincing Jesse Lee Peterson. It's more, is it worth doing so that maybe people in the audience see how quickly his assertions fall apart and crumble? I don't go in thinking the goal here is to convince Jesse Lee Peterson to change his mind. It's let's just show how silly and cartoonish his entire perspective is, you know? So I think it's just, we have to manage what the expectation is. I wasn't trying to change his mind.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, you had one person come back and say, oh, I'm a Democrat now and, you know, not a Republican anymore, which is a good thing, I think, maybe.
Yeah, no, people saw it and maybe they changed their minds as a result of seeing it, for sure. I think that's really the goal. It's for the audience rather than for Jesse Lee Peterson.
But now in the Tuesday election, Youngkin won, yep. I think it was a few things like the CRT, which is not, you know, taught anywhere, but they made a boogeyman out of nothing, just like Trump did out of a caravan is coming, and he tried to do it in the midterms as well. Mm-hmm. But what do you think, like, why can't Democrats also make a boogeyman out of something that Republicans do?
It's just not clear Democrats would fall for it. Like, what would they do? What would they do? Oh, Republicans want to ban abortion. Well, it's like, well, most of them do. It's not, you know, what would the boogeyman be, you know?
Anything like that. Yeah, exactly. Like abortion or, our child care, that we are basically at the end of the list in the world.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to create
so many points.
It doesn't seem to create the fear and anger that motivates these Republicans to get out and vote. Let me think about whether there is such an issue. It's an interesting idea, Jill, but I just don't know if it would work. Let me think about it.
Those are the two. Thank you. Keep on doing what you're doing. I'm going to switch from TYT to you, Twitch sub.
Oh,
and
wow.
Thank you so much for everything.
All right. Thanks, Jill. Appreciate it. There's Jill from Burbank, very, very strongly presenting a number of different arguments. Let's go next to Tim from Wisconsin. Tim, you are on the air next.
Hey, David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. Let's see. I guess I'm a little bit concerned with all the school boards lately, where you keep on seeing these threats of violence. Is there a threshold in your mind that we really need to be, you know, taking some defensive action or doing something?
What do you mean? You're saying to, like, security at school board meetings, or do you mean political defense?
More physical, like security.
Yeah, I mean, we're probably already past that threshold, to be totally honest. I think that there are some places that have gone to closed school board meetings. They've eliminated this, like, audience commentary portion to make it safer. But I think we're already there. And, you know, it really varies. It depends on the school district. But I think we're already at the point where physical security has to be a concern.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Sadly, unfortunately.
All right. That's all I had.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. I appreciate that. A lot of good topics today. Let's go to EJ from the Philippines. EJ, you are on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, barely heard.
Just barely. What was your question today? Let's see if we can get through it.
Okay, so my question is that it's about the 2024 elections. Well, I know it's a bit far away, but I want to ask you if Biden won't run again in 2024.
I don't know yet.
Kamala, this... Yeah, hypothetical. It's a hypothetical.
Oh,
question.
Okay.
If he won't run again in 2024, then Harris chose hat in the nomination. Should she be? I think she should be primaried.
No. I am not. I would never say there should be no primary. I mean, if there's a good candidate, if Joe Biden doesn't run and Kamala runs, if somebody wants to primary her, they absolutely should do it. I mean, I've already said, I don't think it looks that good for Kamala Harris if she becomes the nominee because Joe Biden doesn't run. But there should be, we have a system, primary whoever you want. I'm not going to be the one saying don't do it, no.
Okay. Well, I did agree with you on that Kamala will never be a good candidate to be battling against Trump in 2024.
Well, we don't know if it will be against Trump, importantly, but I just don't see Kamala, based on her persistently low approval rating and her lack of tangible accomplishments so far, still a long time to go, of course. It's not feeling to me like she would be a super strong candidate in 2024, but I could be wrong. We still got 3 years to go.
Fair enough, and it's just in my two cents or my opinion after all.
Okay, good. How are things in the Philippines otherwise? Okay.
Not really.
No. COVID, what's going on?
Election also here next year, the presidency, the vice presidency, and other political positions.
Yeah, you're not a Duterte fan. It sounds like.
Yes.
You're not. Okay,
I mean, I was at first, but then he kind of lost my respect.
Fair. Yeah, mine too. EJ, thank you for the call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
All right. Very good. There is EJ from the Philippines. We're going to take a very quick break. If you're holding on to talk to me, don't hang up because I'm going right back to the phones in a moment. Let's get back to the phones and speak to a few more people. You can join the Discord through which we take phone calls at davidpakman.com/discord. It's a great system. It really, really is. Why don't we go next to Dean from the state of Ohio? Dean, you are on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, hi, first time caller.
Thank you.
Glad to talk to you, David.
Pleasure.
And I am a current college student in a comp sci class, comparative politics. And I was curious on your opinion on parliamentary democracies, because right now in the U.S., we have kind of a very strong gridlock in our Senate system. And I prefer presidential systems, but, you know, if we had a parliamentary democracy where we could, I guess, effectively get more things done, do you think the U.S. would be a better or worse country for it? It's kind of a broad question. But
my general belief on this, and I've talked about it a little bit before, is that I think that a parliamentary system would bring actually many good things to the United States, where you would have, a system where you have the leader of the party with the greatest representation in the legislature becoming, typically it would be like the prime minister or the chancellor rather than a directly elected president. I generally think it would be an improvement for the United States, although I've had some concerns that there's a lot of really crazy extremists here and that really horrible parties which have no official representation right now could end up having some official representation, and that there's certainly a danger to that. It's a very hypothetical, it's merely an academic question, because the U.S. is not going to change to a parliamentary system anytime soon. I'm not like Trump where I go, the U.S. will never, at no point soon, right? At no point soon. And so I think that we have to try to improve things in other ways.
Of course.
Yeah, but no, I like parliamentary systems as a general principle.
And I guess as a slight addendum to that question, we have a mix in the U.S. of a single member districts that we elect to represent people, and then we have a proportional system.
Yes.
Do you think we would be better off if we went to 100% proportional? I know there's pros and cons of both, but it just seems like we have a Senate that disproportionately represents Republicans, even though they have less percentage overall in the United States.
Yeah, which, you know, the Senate is fundamentally anti-democratic. I've talked about this before. It's not representative. You have something like the senators representing, I'm trying to get the number right, it's like 34% of the population, senators representing 34% of the population control half of the votes, which is fundamentally unrepresentative and undemocratic. Again, it's one of these things where there's no way to deny that that's the case, and it's just not going to change anytime soon. And so I wonder about the prudency of focusing on it. I want to make sure people understand this. The Senate is fundamentally not democratic and not representative. But okay, so then what do we do with that? And do we just focus on that and ignore everything else that we could be working on? That doesn't seem prudent either.
Oh, but of course, David, yeah. My apologies. I will try to come if I call again next time to get a more pragmatic question. I was more of an academic question.
Oh, no, I'm not criticizing it. I'm only making it like, in other words, I'm saying you are 100% spot on about these issues. And I agree with you and I talk about them as well. And I wonder what is the balance of like activism capital that should be spent on one thing versus the other when these things seem very ingrained. Now, the counterpoint would be, David, if you don't try to activate around these things, they're going to remain the way they are. And that's a good point, too. You know, so I don't know where our pragmatic versus idealist balance should be.
Thank you so much, David.
My pleasure. All right. Extraordinary phone call there. Love it. Let's go next to Michael from Berlin, New Jersey. Michael, you're next.
Hi, David. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. You sound like you're talking through a voice modulator.
I know. A headset.
Okay. What's going on?
I just wanted to, explain the experience at the polls yesterday. I worked as a poll worker.
Okay.
In New Jersey, mm-hmm. and I just wanted to explain my experience that it was actually a great experience. It felt like I was really doing a democratic thing.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it didn't work out the way I wanted it to, but it's okay because I felt like I actually did my duty. So
I'm curious, were there poll workers trying to electioneer in some way during their work?
Yeah, we did actually have a problem. They were within the 100-foot zone, and people were complaining outside.
But those were poll workers, or these were just people trying to campaign there?
Campaign outside.
Oh, okay. Okay. Did you have any issues like on there was this video, there was a picture of some guy all MAGA'd out working the polls. You didn't have anything like that?
No.
That's good.
No, thankfully not.
Yeah.
But we were in a rural area in New Jersey, mm-hmm. so like close to the Pine Barrens. So maybe you would have that in the like in a big city, maybe, or in a suburban area.
Okay.
But what I liked, we were in teams. Like you couldn't just be a poll worker and not have a like. I was in charge of bringing the votes back into the central location,
mm-hmm.
to the town hall. And I was teamed up with a Republican, and it happened to be a woman. Actually, I was the only male in the whole group out of 12. I was okay. the only male, and actually turned out to be a great thing. And she was such a, what was it? She was definitely the opposite of a low information person. Like she was very spot on. She was very capable and competent. So, I mean, I guess I'm thinking negatively about Republicans, but I just couldn't believe that she was a Republican. That's how competent, and so I just wanted to share that she was very, competent, and I would gladly work with her again.
Now I'm curious, it even coming up what people's party affiliations were? In other words, is it because there's supposed to be a split of Democrats and Republicans?
Yes, right.
I got it.
If you return I was responsible for returning the ballots, mm-hmm. right? And you can't do that by yourself. You have to have a fair delegation. So you have to have a Republican and a Democrat.
Got it. So, all right, very good. Well, it sounds like it was a good experience. Yeah. I would encourage more people to become poll workers.
Yes, I would do. I would do the same. Thank you.
Beautiful. All right, Michael from Berlin, New Jersey. Great to hear from you. A lot of people, in fact, in the audience emailed me and said, David, I was a poll worker here. I was a poll worker there. Quite compelling stuff. Let's go next to Dan from the United Kingdom. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, that's good. I'm on my AirPods, so if the sound goes, I'm sorry.
Beautiful.
I kind of had a couple of questions. Sorry if I ramble a bit. One kind of concerns sort of political apathy, because I'm aware I only vaguely follow this because we obviously got our own troubles over here. But the Virginia governor race, I noted that there was about 3.3 million votes in that race, and that's kind of a high compared to sort of previous elections. But
right.
when you think about that in sort of comparison to the presidential election, that was kind of a million votes lower. And then when you think about sort of primary votes more broadly, they're often sort of miles lower than the actual general election. But that's where you can kind of get the most ideological diversity amongst the parties, and you could probably get the most change. How do you think we could sort of, or how we, I mean, countries more general, where you've got sort of 40% of the public not voting even in the main elections, and sort of local government here, sometimes elections can barely get 20% of the vote, and they control a lot of power. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that one.
So listen, there's a couple different answers to this. One answer is that the idealistic answer would be, well, listen, the way we get people interested here, Dan, is we have to make sure everybody understands the direct link between their going out to vote, even in midterms and local municipal elections, and the things that happen in their community. As soon as you explain this to people, you're going to see voter turnout increase dramatically. It's kind of BS in the sense that it's been tried so many ways and it just never really seems to work. Like, there's just low turnout in the U.S., and then there's even lower turnout for midterms. It's just there's just lower turnout. And the problem with that is that it disproportionately helps whoever can be the most salacious in their campaign. And in Virginia, it was Republicans who used fear and anger to get Republican voters out to fight critical race theory, which they wrongly believe is being taught in schools. So my real answer would be, like, the idealistic answer is, let's just explain to people how important it is to participate. It doesn't really work very well. A lot of people see it almost as a badge of honor that they don't work. They don't vote. Some people see it as a badge of honor not to work, but we're talking about voting here. They see it as a badge of honor not to vote. And if voting is not mandatory, that's considered completely valid. And that's the way it is. So the next step would be, well, just you make voting mandatory like it is in many countries.
Yeah.
I just don't think you're going to see it in the U.S. I think it goes against sort of like the idea of the fundamental principles of the United States.
It wouldn't even happen.
Exactly.
It wouldn't even happen.
So then where I think where we end up, unfortunately, Dan, is we have to accept that 40% of eligible voters won't vote in presidential elections and 60% won't vote in midterms. And you just have to figure out, how do you win and achieve change given that reality? It's depressing, I know, but I think that that's where we're at.
I don't know if you've got time for one more. It was kind of sort of linked to this. It's, I guess, like, when you kind of, you can, I guess in any election, you might get sort of a dozen or so kind of broad categories of policy discussed, but often that, as you kind of talked about, something like critical race theory or the opposition to teaching of something which isn't really taught.
Yeah.
Is, I guess, if you kind of line up things by sort of the harm they cause, so I guess climate change could be one, corruption could be another, lack of healthcare, and so on. But these sometimes can get the least kind of, they're the ones that do the most damage where they get the least focus.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way of sort of, like, as maybe as activists or perhaps convincing the media, changing the media environment, how do you kind of is there a way to recalibrate a sort of public discourse to focus on things that cause sort of the most harm, rather than something like, I don't know, like the sort of the risk of dying from COVID is like 100 times or greater than being killed?
Unfortunately, unless you change the infrastructure around how corporate media works, you're not going to change that, because when you have profit-driven media that wants to focus on the most salacious and titillating stories, unless you change the fact that there's a big reward for that, I don't know how you make the changes to the discourse that you're talking about. I mean, part of it would be counter options. So we've seen the growth of long form podcast discussions and all these different things. And that's great, but it's also great because it's profitable too, right? If it were completely not viable, then you wouldn't see that either. So that's more of a cultural thing. I don't think you change it by changing media. I think media will change as the culture changes around what's profitable and what gets eyeballs.
Yeah, no, I often kind of move towards, like, sometimes I like listening to sort of long form podcasts or long form discussions about a single topic rather than sort of clickbait headlines, because they don't really go into any depth. So I kind of try and sort of diversify what I'm listening to beyond just typical headlines. Although the BBC does a decent job here. They may not be brilliant, but at least they're not like, that you can get in-depth explainers on there. So they do typically a better job, but they're still not perfect. Thanks for taking my question.
Pleasure. Dan from the UK, great to hear from you. Let's see if he can redeem himself. I'm going to go to Eric from Cancun, who had a disastrous call last time he called in. Eric, I'm giving you another shot, okay? Uh-oh. Eric, you got to unmute yourself, my friend. Oh, boy. Going from bad to worse for Eric from Cancun. Eric, you are on the air. This is your last chance. You've got to unmute yourself or configure your microphone. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to talk. All right, there it is. Eric from Cancun attempting to redeem himself, but it didn't work. It just didn't work. Let's try Kevin from Seattle. Kevin, you're on the air.
Mr. Pacman, can you hear me?
I can.
Excellent. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question related to infrastructure, and I don't know what your opinion is on this, but I think leaving the bipartisan infrastructure bill, leaving it idle is very risky. Like, it doesn't help Biden's approval ratings nor Democrats' approval rating, especially Terry McAuliffe. It doesn't help the furloughed workers who are working to fix our infrastructure, and it sucks up so much oxygen in Congress from other issues. And the American people like the bipartisan infrastructure bill and want to see and feel like those representing them could get something accomplished for once. So my question is, like, is there credence to, like, the moderate position from, like, a progressive point of view? Like, is holding up the infrastructure bill damaging to the material interests of the American people?
Yeah, so I think leaving the bill idle is bad for everybody. I think either, listen, vote on the bill, kill the bill if that's what people in Congress want to do, House and Senate, or pass some version of the bill and it's time to move on. It's been going on for months. These bills are by and large popular with the American people. There's disagreements about specific elements of it, but I completely agree with you. Just the ongoing negotiation used to get oxygen by people like Kyrsten Sinema, Joe Manchin, and others. It's a disaster for the American people. It's got to end, and just letting it sit idle also is wrong. So either kill it or pass it, and then we've got to move on to the next thing. I agree with you 100%.
All right. I think that's all. I think if anything, I cannot wrap my head around, like, why those who are, like, in opposition, like, why is this, like, the hill to die on? Like, if we care about the American people, then I think we shouldn't think the bill should be voted on based on its merits rather than just. I don't think
they see it as a hill to die on. They're just like, yeah, I'm not the people who are sort of like just against it, which is basically Republicans. Joe Manchin keeps talking about it because he's using it to get attention and he may actually ultimately vote for it. Republicans aren't really dying on the hill. They're just like, yeah, we don't want it, so we don't support it. And then they move on. So it's actually doing far more damage to Democrats. Kevin, I got to run. I appreciate the call, Kevin from Seattle. I appreciate everybody I was able to speak to today. That's going to do it for today. We're going to go to a break. I hope to speak to you again next time we take live calls. All right, let's get into this week's mailbag. You can email info@davidpakman.com, and many of you do. Let's go through some emails that I received, some interesting ideas, thoughts, all sorts of different things. All right, first message today is from Bryce. Bryce is thinking like a expert on cults, quite frankly. And Bryce says, David, is it just me, or when Trump eventually passes away, all the Trump supporters will be acting like he's going to come back and resurrect like Jesus? What are your thoughts? That's Bryce from New York. Yeah, I mean, listen, there's no question that there are many cult-like elements surrounding Donald Trump. And he is seen almost as a pseudo deity, as a demigod by some of his followers. And when Trump famously said, "I could shoot people on Fifth Avenue and not lose support," he was latching on to something very real, which is that for many of his followers, the facts don't really matter. It's the idea of Trump that they care about. Now, when Trump eventually passes away, will people literally think he's going to resurrect like Jesus? That's probably a little bit of an exaggeration, but not that by that much. I do think that he will be deified in death by whoever is still with him at that time. You know, people are still flying. Look, I mean, just drive around in most parts of the country. You can still find some Trump 2020 flags, which might even have something added onto it, like Biden lost, or now let's go Brandon, or something like that. They are still deifying him in a sense in life, and I expect them to in death. Literal resurrection ideology, probably not. That's probably a little too far, but it's Trump. It's Trump. So maybe. I wouldn't ever assume the answer is impossible. Justin wrote to me and said, "Microchips are real. Sir, David, does no one else see the connection? The reason why there are microchip shortages for new vehicles is that they were all used in the production of the vaccines," which, with much respect, Justin. Yeah, I know Justin's kidding. And there is this funny way. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's not funny, when different conspiracy theories or different data points come together to foment a conspiracy theory. This one's kind of funnier. We have a microchip shortage for cars because all the microchips are in the vaccines. Okay, this one's just funny. The one that's not so funny, though, is the one we looked at on Monday of someone speaking at some school board meeting and explaining that what ties all of this stuff together, who profits from the vaccines, who controls the deep state, all of this different, it's the Jews. And that was one woman beautifully tying together in her mind, disgustingly in reality, but beautifully in her mind, tying together all of these different conspiracy theories and saying the Jews are responsible for all this stuff. We knew that it was happening because of reports. We saw it happen very, very real, in a real way over the weekend. Next email is from Alan. Alan says, in response to my video about, are there really any anti-vaccine religions? Alan said, you overlooked an important point on religious vaccine exemptions. Alan says, David, sir, I heard your segment on religious exemptions for vaccines. And although you did a great job analyzing the situation, I think there's an important aspect you overlooked. I was teaching at a Catholic high school until the end of last year. Now I'm in a public school, thankfully. And the biggest debate was on the morality of how the vaccines were developed, and not that vaccination is specifically against the religion. What I'm referring to is the cell lines of aborted fetuses used in development of the vaccines. Although we had a decent percentage of our community staff, students, and families get vaccinated, we had multiple people hesitant or objecting because of the cell line usage. Again, this is not explicitly the Catholic faith saying the members are forbidden from getting vaccinated, but it does introduce a lot of hesitancy, which I'm sure exists throughout most Christian faiths. Love your show, Alan. Yeah, a few people emailed me about this, and this is a good point, which is, my discussion last week was about, is there actually a religion that is just against vaccination? There are individuals who are saying, because I am against abortion and because fetal cell lines were used in the development of the vaccines and the technology, even though there are not fetal cells in the injection, that is being used by some. But I did miss it. I should have mentioned it. I agree. But it's different than the question of simply, it's against my religion, because that seems to allude more to the specific teachings of religion about vaccines. And I think I should have mentioned it. I'm glad that people emailed in about it. Gareth wrote in, this is actually an important topic. Gareth says, very suspect Florida numbers. Hey, David and the crew, do the Florida numbers not seem incredibly low considering the case rate is almost 1,500, yet only one death per day? I've attached a photo, and the photo is exactly what Gareth describes. So there's two things going on in Florida. One of them I've talked about. In Florida, they've done this thing where they report the deaths on a delay. So each week, they report the deaths from the previous week. And so it always makes it look like over the last 7 or 8 days, deaths have just declined almost to zero. But it's been going on for months. Like for months, if you look at the recent deaths, it looks like the last 7 days are almost zero. Then they update it and then it shows up again. So that's one part of it. I also, more generally, though, am wondering whether Florida is just lying or not fully reporting or not collecting. Not collecting would be the most sort of realistic explanation, because the numbers just look bizarrely low relative to what's going on in other states. We're seeing case declines in the United States, but even the numbers more generally in Florida after the 7 day kind of like holding period, it looks weird. It looks weird. So I think if we're going to say Florida's lying, we really need evidence. But I think that what we could suspect is, given Florida's lack of concern at the governor's level for controlling COVID, and given DeSantis's lack of interest in being particularly transparent, we know this based on that person who was fired for putting together the COVID dashboard that more accurately reported the data. It wouldn't be shocking if there's just a sort of like, we don't really care about fully reporting, not someone going in and saying, lie, change these numbers. But it wouldn't surprise me if there was sort of like an indifference and there wasn't full reporting currently going on. Certainly possible. Tommy wrote to me about Trump rallies and said, hi, David, I think you're going to find this quite interesting. Yet every time I see a Trump rally, I see the same two people in the background. One is a black guy with a white shirt saying blacks for Trump. And the guy beside him is wearing a green shirt, veterans for Trump. Now there's two different rallies. They're both behind Trump. Here are the photos, by the way, love your show. Yeah, Tommy is completely right that veterans for Trump, I'm less sure of, but we're seeing some of the same supposed blacks for Trump supporters show up at multiple rallies. My position on this is as follows. When you try to find information about Blacks for Trump as a group, there's almost nothing on the internet. There's just, you try to figure out who are the members, who's in charge, what is the group, what exactly do they do? You find essentially nothing. So the reaction from many is this is a fake group, and the campaign is paying black people to stand behind Trump during rallies to make it seem like he has black support. Now, I've stopped short of saying that because I don't know that to be true. And for me, it feels a little weird to basically say a movement of minority folks claiming to have a particular position is by definition astroturf or fake. Unless I have real evidence that that's what's going on, I'm not comfortable saying that. It feels weird to me. But in terms of data points, we do know that the group Blacks for Trump has almost no footprint online, which is strange in 2021, that there are times where it's been alleged that Trump-affiliated groups have been recruiting what are essentially actors, people to stand holding signs at events, not saying they were recruiting black folks specifically, but we have that as a data point. And some of the same people appear at multiple of these rallies. So that's what we know. I'm not ready to say it's all paid actors, but we've gotten a number of emails about this, and it certainly seems as though there may be something too. It's not clear how real Blacks for Trump is as an organization. I'm completely comfortable saying that. Next email is from Andrew, and it's called COVID, the New Culture War. Hello, David, says Andrew. I believe that COVID is the new culture war among Republicans, such as the whole Merry Christmas culture war, when I didn't know of anyone on the left who really cared if somebody used Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays. At least the Merry Christmas culture war wasn't deadly, as today's Republicans have literally entered into a death cult. Also, I think all these police officers quitting for refusing the vaccine is a good thing, since the majority of them support Trump, and as a result, the police brutality rate will most likely go down. A few people have actually emailed me that, saying, aren't the cops quitting over the vaccine thing exactly the cops that we've been saying are the bad apples that we want out anyway? I don't know that for sure, but it's a very interesting hypothesis, which is when we talk about police brutality, etc., I believe we accurately say it's a very small minority of bad apples, which can spoil the bunch for sure. If there's overlap between the police brutality people and the cops refusing to get the vaccine, maybe we benefit from them quitting and no longer being police officers. It's a hypothesis, folks. It's a hypothesis. That's all we're saying. In terms of the left doesn't really care about Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays, I agree. I've never met anyone who expressed being angry about Merry Christmas being said at a store. What I would always do, without getting offended, just as like a kind of joke, is if someone said Merry Christmas to me, I would say Happy Hanukkah. I wasn't mad. I didn't later complain. It's just my immediate reaction. They're saying something to me based on what they celebrate. So I don't celebrate Christmas, but I respond saying Happy Hanukkah. And if it's not relevant to them, maybe the next time they go, oh, maybe I'll say Happy Holidays because Merry Christmas might not be, or it's like no big deal. I just kind of found it funny. It's how I entertain myself at grocery stores. But yeah, I've never met anyone who was like mad or said, I need to speak to the manager. Someone said Merry Christmas. It is a trumped up culture war for sure. Okay, last email today. This is a different one. We had a lot of substantive emails, positive emails, questions, comments. This is Mark. Mark writes to me about garbage and says, your left-wing garbage and propaganda is the root, or the root, as some say, of everything wrong with our country. You have no business being on the air. You are garbage. That is Mark, presented without comment, as we get into what will hopefully be a great weekend for everybody. Thanks for joining me. We've got a fantastic bonus show planned for you, and we will be back next week with so much more. Sign up at joinpacman.com. Get instant access to today's bonus show. Otherwise, no more new content until Monday.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
WRCT, this is the place that sets the pace for Pittsburgh.
WRCT is the best place to be. He sends the music out your way 40 hours every day.
It's been a long time since you've touched the hand and the heart of that special someone. You're not alone. This is WRCT Pittsburgh's Radio Automation Service. Stay tuned for more tracks from our radio and record library.
WRCT, the in sound from way out.
I'm from creationist crucifixion.
R, I'm not attractive and I'm from steel curtain.
Me neither, R.
WRCT.
Pittsburgh, 88.3, R.
Oh, it's E. Dueto from the Love Dogs and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Things get brighter day by day when you listen to the Big W. Life is lighter in every way when you listen to the Big W. So laugh it up and let yourself go with King Size Radio, the Big WRCT, Radio Carnegie Tech.
Hi, we are Microwaves, reminding you that the most important things in life are
to crush your enemies,
to see them driven before you,
and to hear the lamentations of their women while listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Yeah, well, this is Kimani Mali, and you're listening to WRCT FM. Keep it locked. Rasta.
Hey, this is Jim from Rusted Root, and you're listening to WRCT 88.3 in Pittsburgh. Yow.
WRCT Radio 900.
Hello, this is Adam Clayton here, the bass player from U2. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
WRCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about flaming cheese as we are.
Yo, there's only 6 degrees of separation and we know 5 people you know. How much longer did you really think you could avoid strict flow? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. Like this!
Hi! We're the Deliverance Strangers! And you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh!
You're listening to WRCT Feedback Radio.
This is Brad Yoder, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
Hi, you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, home of... Oh, crap. We're not really home of anything, are we, Andrew?
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Mary.
From High
Places.
And you're listening to WRCT
88.3 FM. A radio station.
From New York and Glasgow, this is Democracy Now!
My heart was broken by the people inside that COP building, by the world leaders who steal our sacred words and use them to defend and uphold the oppressive systems of capitalism and white supremacy, who tell us that action needed to prevent sea level rise engulfing my ancestral home in Jamaica is impossible or not practical.
Over 100,000 people filled the streets of Glasgow in a pair of major rallies to urge world leaders to take more action to address the climate emergency. We'll hear from British activist Michaela Loach, who's suing the UK government over its climate policies, Vanessa Nakate of Uganda, and Greta Thunberg of Sweden.
The COP has turned into a PR event, where leaders are giving beautiful speeches and announcing fancy commitments and targets, while behind the curtains, the governments of the global north countries are still refusing to take any drastic climate action.
Plus, 1,000 land and environmental defenders have been killed since the signing of the Paris Agreement in 2015. Some were remembered this weekend.
Maritza Isabel Quiroz was a land defender and peasant leader. She was assassinated in Santa Marta in 2019. Justice for Maritza. Justice! Juana Perea, she was an environmental leader and women's organizer opposed to the Puerto of Truga, and she was assassinated in Nuki in 2020. Justice for Juana. Justice!
We'll speak with Andrea Ishu, a Maya Quiche leader and journalist from Guatemala, and Louis Wilson of Global Witness, both inside the Glasgow COP. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As the United Nations Climate Summit continues in Glasgow, Scotland, more than 100,000 demonstrators took to the streets over the weekend to demand more urgent and meaningful action to prevent a planetary catastrophe. Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg called COP26 a failure. This is Ugandan climate activist Vanessa Nakate addressing the crowd Saturday.
And leaders continue to open up new coal power plants, construct oil pipelines, and frack gas without paying attention and listening to the voices crying out for help because of the destruction that is happening. That leaders have failed to
We'll hear more from Vanessa and many others after headlines. Marches and rallies took place on every continent Saturday, as well as online, as part of the global movement. Meanwhile, an analysis by Global Witness found hundreds of fossil fuel lobbyists are flooding COP26, with over 100 coal, oil, and gas companies and associated groups represented. If the fossil fuel lobby were a national delegation at COP, it would be by far the largest, according to the report, and we'll speak with one of those who did the report. The U.S. House passed the bipartisan $1.2 trillion infrastructure